I've teamed up with GoCar. Let me tell you why. For those of you who have been following me for a while, you'll know that I don't like car loans, and I've even referred to them as crappy debt. If you own your own car, and you're doing 16,000 kilometres a year, that's a cost of about €10,691 a year. The equivalent of a GoCar is around €3,600. That's a potential saving of €7,000 every year. Not only that, but the hourly rate you pay covers insurance, tax, maintenance and fuel. In Dublin City, it's so convenient. On average, there is a GoCar within a 5-minute walk from wherever you are. Download the GoCar app today for a smarter, more affordable way to move. This is Understanding Money and I am Owen McGee. Today's show is a really interesting one. We're going to talk about freelancers and working for yourself. And I know we've covered that in another episode as well, but we're going to talk about working for yourself because we're going to talk to Aideen Fitzmaurice. A lot of you will know her from Instagram and from social media, Instagram in particular. And Aideen's going to talk to us a little bit about how she set up on her own 2 years ago and some of the decisions she's had to make around that. But she's also going to talk to us about influencers and how they make their money. And I really think you're going to get a lot from this conversation because I certainly did. We're going to try and open up that black box and understand how it all works. We've got your questions as usual, and then we'll wrap up with just some key nuggets and takeaways. But for today, I think the best thing we can do for this episode is jump straight in with Aideen and see what she has to say. Aideen, thanks very much for joining us today. What I wanted to talk to you about, we have spoken to somebody who was very new, who had gone out on their own. You're a bit more established. You're about 2 years out on your own at that stage. I want to talk to you about that side and how being self-employed and giving up the day job type of thing has gone for you because you're a little bit further down your journey. But I also want to talk to you about the whole influencer stuff, right? And just how does that work financially? But tell me about yourself, first of all. Introduce yourself to our guests and who you are and what you do.
So I'm Aideen Fitzmaurice. I'm a digital content creator, originally from Arklow County, Wicklow, but I've been in Dublin about 10 years. So my content focuses on food, culture, the Irish language. You might know me for like 3 avocado toasts in Dublin. That's usually, you know, the byline, but that's what I do.
Yeah. You and I kind of connected. You listened to the podcast, I think, over a couple of days. Listened to series one of Understanding Money and the two of us then started chatting and that's why you're here today.
100%. I'm really interested in talking about money. And that interest definitely came when I left my job.
Right.
Because I am from a family of 2 teachers. I never had somebody who was in business around me. So when I made the decision to go out on my own, it was just like I was in the dark. I had no idea how to do anything, what to do, who to talk to. So I really had to self-educate and spend a lot of time understanding money. Because if you're working for yourself and you don't understand money, that's where you're really going to struggle.
Yeah.
So I became really interested in it. And your podcast has been great for that.
And tell me, what were you doing up to 2 years ago before you went out on your own?
I was working in social media.
Okay.
So I started as a journalist in Love in Dublin, which would be a big publication. During my time there, I grew it to 300,000.
Wow.
And then I moved to advertising. And then finally, my last job before I quit was I did social media for Web Summit. So I was living in Lisbon and everything while I was there. So I'm still doing that side of things as well. I have my own company called Fia Digital. And that was kind of my first idea when I left my job and definitely what has kept me going. So February 2022, I set that up and that specializes in social media content creation, ideation and mentorship for brands.
Okay. And are you dealing with big companies, small companies, everything?
Yeah, I have. At the minute, my 2 kind of rolling contracts would be TK Maxx and HomeSense and then Tullamore Dew. So they're the ones that I have basically every single month. And I know that once I have them, I'm kind of set.
Yeah.
And then I take on smaller people because I'm really passionate about small Irish businesses. So I have a little block for them every month as well.
Okay. And then your own personal Instagram, your own one that you're driving your own side of the business on. What are you at? About 250, 300,000 followers?
250 this weekend I hit, yeah.
Oh, brilliant.
Yeah.
Okay. You have 250 and your content is great because, and what I love about it is you can really get a sense of a place. Like if you go somewhere random down the country, you get a sense of, oh, what I find I do then is I jump into my notes and I write the little things down and say, that's where, and you save the post. But you do give us a great insight into what it is. And that's why it works, I suppose.
Thank you so much. When I left my job, I only had less than 50. I think I had 30,000. So that was 2 years ago. So it just shows sometimes taking that scary leap can result in so much more because you have time and energy to kind of focus on it.
I don't want to go into numbers, right? But let's talk about percentages. Uh-huh. How is your income split between your 250,000 followers on your personal account versus the kind of consulting that you do?
I'd say between 50-50 or 60-40 in terms of the influencing probably generates more revenue per job. And then Fia Digital, I'm definitely working harder and making less, but that's kind of like the passion side and that keeps my industry brain ticking. So it's at the minute like maybe 60% revenue through influencer content and then 40% through my Fia Digital clients.
Okay, the juicy stuff.
Yeah.
How does an influencer get paid and what type of money do influencers get paid?
Well, this is why I'm so delighted to be here because this is what I want to talk about this more. And I think the understanding needs to be there because nothing annoys me more than people saying, well, you got paid to say that. Of course you think that restaurant's good.
Yeah.
When in actual fact, I don't get paid by any restaurants. I pay my way in all the restaurants that I visit. It's not kind of a free meal. So how influencers get paid in Ireland, unlike other countries, we don't have the TikTok Creator Fund. So we won't get paid per view of our video. The only platform that enables us to do that would be YouTube. And not very many Irish creators use YouTube because it's so much work and it doesn't get as many views. You need to be getting like up to kind of 1 million views on a YouTube video to be making pretty good revenue from it.
Okay. So, and what's pretty good revenue at 1 million views?
Maybe like you'd probably get like 1,800 for a video, maybe.
For 1 million views.
Yeah.
Okay. That's a lot of work to get
really
there.
It really depends as well, though. Like it constitutes around like watch time and stuff. Mm. So you want to have really long videos as well, which obviously takes much longer to edit. So it's a whole thing. But how I make my money as an influencer is through brand deals.
Okay.
So it would be like working with the likes of Falcha Ireland, for example, which I have a rolling contract with them because I do a lot of content around traveling with Ireland. So maybe at the start of the year, I might sign kind of a 3-month contract with them where we would agree on what the content would be. So typically an influencer package now is 1 reel and 3 stories. And then you might share that reel on your TikTok as well.
Okay.
But one really interesting nugget about this is I'm not the one who's negotiating the money. I don't deal with the money.
Okay.
I have a management, much like yourself, I'm sure. And they take a 20% cut of anything that I make and they do all the negotiation.
Okay.
So you want to make sure that you have a good management as well because you could end up in the wrong one and they could be taking more than 20% and you wouldn't know about it.
Yeah.
So that's how it works these days. Most influencers have agents and they would discuss and negotiate all the rights.
And does it work? And I know we've mentioned Falcha Ireland, so I just want to be really clear. I'm not asking about that specific contract.
Yeah.
I'm talking in general, right?
Yeah.
Does it work that with your 250,000 followers, does someone with 500,000 followers get paid twice as much for the same deal with a brand?
Yeah, it's all based on your numbers. Now, I think personally, it shouldn't be. I think it should be down to your engagement rate and your views because you're kind of paying per view. But nowadays, it's up to kind of your followings. And like people with big followings are taking in probably over 100K per year on brand deals. Like I'm talking the big kind of the 1 million followers, the 500,000 followers. They're making a very good revenue
per year.
So they're
pulling in 100 grand a year off that. And that's kind of for 1 reel and three stories.
Yeah.
But are they doing that? Are they doing 1 reel and 3 stories for 10 different brands every week?
Well,
to make
you see, that's the thing. I think when your brand scales, because you're making more per brand deal, you actually do less.
Okay.
And that's kind of just organically how it happens because brands don't have massive budgets either in Ireland. So the way brands work is they'll have a budget for a campaign in terms of marketing, because I work on this side of it as well. So they will say, okay, we'll work with one big influencer where we have a budget of probably between 2 and 3K. Then we'd have 2 mid-tier, which would be like the people who are around like 30 to 80K. And then you'd have like the macro and the nano influencers who are the smaller side. And you can put kind of a lot more money into them. And actually their engagement rates are much higher. So they can spread their budget across that, but they're only ever picking one big influencer is my point. So once you get into those higher numbers, it's kind of harder to get those brand deals. And a lot of big influencers rely on brand ambassadorships. So they'll work with a brand for a much longer time rather than taking lots of kind of smaller ones. And once you get a larger following as well, I think people don't want to see you doing 1 million brand deals. So it's very important to always have that relationship with your audience where there's trust there. So it works better to have the long-standing partnerships work with a few of the same people at a higher rate.
Tell me the waiting. Let's lift the veil off.
Yep.
What type of money? Is there a matrix of saying X amount of followers, or how does it work?
Yeah. So I have like, I just wrote like a basic list down here. I would say like between 10 to like 100K, you're probably like
100,000 followers, you mean, is it?
Yeah. You're probably talking like from 2 to 300 all the way up to like 1,500 for like a reel with three stories.
Okay.
Then if you go like beyond the 100K mark, you could be talking like 1,500 up to, I don't know, like if you have a million, you could be getting 10,000.
Okay.
For a post.
For the exact same thing,
yeah.
For the post and three stories.
Yeah. There's also a site called Inspire. I think that's the name of it. And you can actually put in any content creator in the world. You can put in their handle in there and it will tell you what the rate would be.
Could I find me there?
Yeah.
Could I?
Yeah.
I'm going to do that afterwards.
It will just basically look at your following and it'll be able to track your engagement and it'll kind of put a rate. And it's pretty accurate, actually. Like, I've done it for myself and I'm like, yeah, it's kind of like, you can do it now if you want to. But like, it's kind
as long as your partner doesn't do it, you're all right.
He's like, where's that new top coming from this one? But it's fairly, I can give you the link and you can put it in here. And it is a good way of kind of telling what kind of race people
are
on.
That's really cool. The amount of people who are going to be doing, I know. What do they make? It's loosely. Yeah, but
that's
still fair. Okay.
Yeah. But as I said, there's often times when I'll work with brands for half of what my going rate is because I'm more passionate about working with them maybe like twice than working with one person once. And
what about, so if it's purely on, like it's not, they're not getting scientific into engagement. And for anyone who doesn't know engagement, you can put up a post and you've got 100,000 followers and 20 people look at it.
Yeah.
Or you can put up a post, you have 100,000 followers and 20,000 people look at it. And that's the difference of the engagement for anyone who doesn't get that, right? But when they're bluntly looking at kind of 10 to 100,000, 100,000 to a million, what's to stop me going and buying a whole pile of bots to follow me and then selling my wares that way?
Well, that's the thing, Owen. Usually what will happen is they might work with you once, but if the engagement isn't there, you certainly won't get another job.
So,
and that is the goal of every content creator, is to continue working with the brands you start working with.
Yes.
Nobody wants to work with 100 brands in a year.
Yeah.
It would be much better to work with five who have a contract with you. So it's basically, you know,
longevity
working
comes
that way.
From getting the,
so if you do a job and you've bought your followers, they'll know pretty quickly and that'll be the end of that kind of thing. Do you know?
Really interesting.
Yeah.
And I can see now the engagement. That makes sense. The engagement isn't looked at when they're paying you, but when they're looking at the results.
Yeah, when they're first signing you. Now, if somebody's very clever, which a lot of the people who would be working on this site are, they would look at your page and see what your engagement would be with, because you can see that on anybody's page. Mm. You can see what the views are and then you can see how many comments their posts are getting. But you can't see saves, which would be one of the big boosters on the algorithm, but you can't see comments.
And this is probably more of a personal question in terms of, I'm just curious for me more than anything else, I'm sure everyone else is too. Is it all about reels now on Instagram?
I upload a reel a day right now, and I have been for probably 2 years now, which I would say is the only reason I'm at 250K now.
Actually, now, right? So people who listen to podcasts will be familiar with Amanda, right? And Sarah joined us as well. And Sarah and Amanda now run the marketing function. They are the marketing function in Prosperous. We've had an argument. And my argument is you should be posting every day.
Mm.
And their argument is 3 to 5 times a week.
Yeah. I think it depends on the page, to be honest.
Sit in the fence there, Aileen.
I do. I think it depends on the page.
My page. Give me some consulting here.
If you can post every day, I would definitely try to.
I win so, don't I? I was right. Okay.
If you could post a reel a day, I would love for you to even challenge your team, right? A reel a day for maybe a month and see what the difference is in your reach. And I could guarantee that it would be much higher and your page would be performing better.
And what about the individual out there who's just starting out on Instagram? What is that the same advice? Post a reel a day and...
Yeah, I think when you're starting out, it's very much like throw shit at the wall and see if it'll stick. So it's not a bad idea to post every day. Like, really try everything. And over time, you'll be like, I actually really enjoy creating outdoors content. Mm. So I want all my content to be outdoors. Or I can't make a reel a day, so I'm only going to make one a week, but it's going to be really high quality, do you know?
Okay.
But I also say to people, think about what's realistic for you. Because if it's not realistic for you to make a reel a day and then you try, you're going to burn yourself out very quickly and you're just going to hate it.
Okay.
So it's about being like realistic, having a really good strategy in place. I offer mentorship to anybody who's starting out through my company, Fia Digital. I also have a podcast called Going Viral, where we talk about all these steps in social media if you want to learn how the machine works.
Excellent. Okay. Can I ask you one question? This is probably the most Make It All About Owen McGee podcast I've ever recorded, right? Why, and it has been incredibly successful, the engagement works really well for me, but why does my Q&A on a Saturday work?
People are at home. Mm. People probably do listen to podcasts on the weekends. Mm. And I think people are more willing to engage with something that happens once a week rather than every day in terms of the gamified side of that.
Yeah.
So it's like people know every Saturday that you're putting a Q&A out.
Yeah.
And they might think 3 weeks in advance, I actually would like to know the answer to this because I listened to that podcast and I'm not sure. And then they have time to ruminate on it and they get a weekly reminder at the exact same time every day. It's a psychology behind it. And a lot of it is psychology.
Yeah.
So they might say in 3 weeks, do you know, I'm still thinking about that question. Mm. So I'm going to ask them now today.
It's interesting because we will get, and I try to explain this, but I'll get on a Saturday somewhere between 800 and 1200 questions.
Yeah, that's amazing.
And I try and get through as many as I can. I still get the crap kicked out of me from time to time. It's like, I've asked this question 4 times. I'm sorry. I'm telling me say it publicly. I'm sorry. I can't do them all.
Yeah.
But some of them are really interesting. And that's what I love about it. It can be very different.
I think people like that Q&As are anonymous as well. Because
particularly in Ireland.
We are a nation that are too afraid to talk about money. And that's why this podcast is so valuable and why I think it's just such a great concept because we shouldn't be afraid to talk about money. It's how we survive. It's how we are going to fund our lifestyle. So I think people like still the anonymity.
I'll let you leave that one out there. I can't go there either.
Of a Q&A.
Aideen, you and I have made the editor's job really difficult because we kept talking and I could keep talking all afternoon with you. It's really great you came in. Is there anything you want to ask me before we finish up?
Oh, maybe. Okay. So I'm 2 years into my business and I've just swapped from sole trader to limited company.
Yes.
Is that a good idea? And what is your advice going forward?
Okay. So that move generally happens when an accountant looks at it or you're looking at it and you're saying, you know what? The end of this year, it'd be nice to be able to keep some money in the business instead of having to pay tax on everything I earned. And it means that you can save some money within the business to reinvest in the business in the future. And it does make a big difference to the longevity of your business, the ability to build up reserves in the business, but also makes a massive difference from pension contributions.
Mm.
Okay, so there was a real change this time last year where now, I won't get too technical, but basically you can put whatever you want into a pension. Your company can.
Yeah.
Whereas as a self-employed person, as a sole trader, it's age limits to determine how much you... So it's 15% in your 20s, it's 20% in your 30s, it's 25%, and so all the way up in your 40s, all the way up to 40% in your 60s. As a sole trader, that's the max you can put in. Now, if you have $500,000 sitting in the business bank account and you want to put it all into your pension, you can do that today if you want to. You have to be mindful of the fact that you can go up, your max pension pot is just over 2 million, right? Mm. But there's a whole pile of extra advantages as well. Be very careful about the expenses.
Okay.
So like one of the things is you're allowed to entertain clients, but it's not an expense. It's not a deductible expense.
Yes. Right? But, right?
Yeah, I go for
this. This is my question for you. My entire Instagram page is built on food reviews.
Yes.
So do they count as a business expense?
I would suggest even the tax man is not going to have a problem with that.
Yeah,
right?
Okay, grand.
Okay, that's what I would suggest. Now, the thing I would say to you though is you, this, that's not my call and I'm not even a tax advisor, right? Yeah. You need to make sure your accountant is happy with it.
I did run it by him.
And don't take the piss, right? And what I mean by that is
spicy margaritas on a Saturday night. That's not a business expense.
That's exactly what I'm saying, right? You need to, like, you might strip off one glass of wine, maybe, but if there's a bottle of wine, you wouldn't put it through,
right?
So you wouldn't, if like, you've a camera person with you or somebody who's with you, I think it's reasonable you'd pay for their dinner. But if there's six of you and you're out with all your mates, you're not going to cover everyone off. So I think if you can stay solid and true to what you think is right and your account is on board. And look, you could actually ask revenue for an opinion on this. Mm. And if anyone does, remember, I know I'm not, I have a good working knowledge of tax system. I have done tax exams, but I don't claim to be a tax advisor. So actually, if anyone who's listening to this wants to tell us, no, this is exactly how that would work, great.
Please
My gut, and we'll let you know, but my gut feel on it would be, as long as you're reasonable, I do think that's a business expense.
Yeah, because I have a great app, actually, for anybody who is self-employed called Dext.
Yeah.
So you can take a photo of your receipt and it scans all the details and it goes into a system where my accountant can look at my yes. costs per month. But I basically write a note on every receipt that I've made to what reel it's going to be.
Yes.
So I can link it directly to the content. Because when I go out to film a video for my page, I do it really intentionally. It's not like I'm just randomly out. Mm. You know, I'll be like, I'll plan my content. So I'll be like, oh, this restaurant opened last week. I'm going to go in. I'm going to make a video.
Mm.
So they're the only ones that I would expense.
Yeah.
But Dext is great for that.
And there's lots of apps actually like that, because a lot of the, depending on who your accountant, what software package they use, like Xero would have a similar thing. There's loads of them. HubDoc is another one. There's a whole pile of ones, but they are a game changer because you do it in real time. You walk out, take a snap of it, and you do it. You absolutely don't forget about it, and they will categorize them, and it's a really good way of doing it.
Mm-hmm.
I'd love to keep going. Right? I genuinely would. And I'm going to finish with this last question.
Go on.
Do restaurants hate seeing you walk through the door?
No, I think they like it. I think they like it. I started as a food journalist. I'm extremely passionate about the industry. So I would know a lot of the chefs now at this point. So we have a really good relationship. And look, I'm not a critic. I only promote places on my page that I have enjoyed.
Mm.
If you see me coming in and you don't get a video, that's your answer kind of thing, you know?
Okay.
So, which happens quite a lot and people don't know that either. But I think at this point, the restaurants know that I'm just there to support them, to promote them, to get more footfall in the door. So I think they enjoy seeing me come in. I think they know it's, you know, if they serve the good food, that it could be a good day for them too.
Aileen, thank you very much for your time.
Thank you.
Joined by Sarah in studio again for this week's Q&A. Sarah, we have a whole pile of stuff around freelancing really, isn't it today?
Yeah, so the questions that we were going through, I kind of went, there wasn't many about freelance work, but there was a couple of questions by people who just got a bit of money. There's one guy who got a redundancy package, another woman whose daughter inherited a house.
Okay.
So I was really interested by the questions and I wanted to know how you'd answer them.
Okay.
So I thought,
let's see,
we'd pop them in this episode.
Okay, so let's see. Let's go for the first question.
Hello, I've been listening to your new and very interesting podcast and have a question about inheritance tax. My daughter has inherited her grandmother's house and I'm wondering what is her tax obligation here and is there any way of reducing it as she's 24 years of age, hasn't got a penny, you know, and I just wondered like what would be the options there for her to reduce that tax bill, if any. Thank you very much.
So what's going to happen here is whatever the house is worth, the first, assuming she has never got, the daughter has never got money from her grandmother before or any of her grandparents, in fact, before, is what's called a Group B threshold, right? She can get $32,500 tax-free and everything above that is going to be subject to capital acquisitions tax, sometimes called inheritance tax. So in really simple terms, if this house was worth €332,500, just to keep the math simple, the first $32,500 is going to be tax-free. The next $300,000, they're going to have to pay tax at 33%. And that's why I use that number, because it's going to be €100,000 in tax.
Yeah.
Okay. And they will have to pay that. And when she said inherit, usually when people say inherit, it means that the grandmother has already passed away.
Yeah.
If she said gifted, I would have assumed that it's happening now and they're still alive. But the fact that it's an inheritance means that the grandmother has always already passed away. So that would suggest to me there's not much you can do.
Yeah.
This is it. Now, the daughter, the 24-year-old in this case, is going to have to either raise the money by getting a mortgage and pay the tax bill or raise the money somewhere else or sell some of the house to whoever or else sell the house.
Yeah.
And sell the house to come up with the tax bill because the tax will have to be paid.
Yeah.
And typically what happens is once the tax, usually about 6 months after the taxes, after death, the tax starts to accumulate interest.
Okay.
So
mad though at 24 because like I'm only 23 and I would be, I don't know what I'd do. So obviously that's good advice what to do, but
so,
I'd say she's...
Yeah, and I don't want her kicking herself either. Oh, what would have been different if she was still alive? If you were different... One of the things, there's a couple of things you could do, like you could be gifting it on an annual, a portion of it on the annual basis.
Yeah.
So anybody in the state can give anybody else in the state €3,000.
Yeah.
And so the granny could have been giving her €3,000 of the value of the house every year for the last 20 years, right? And that doesn't sound, or 24 years, right? That doesn't sound like much, but €3,000 a year, we'd be up at 60, 70, 80 grand at this stage of the house plus the 32 and a half, and it would have made a difference. And there's a few other different things you can do.
Yeah.
They've closed a lot of the doors though.
Yeah.
Yeah. So interesting one.
Yeah.
Still, 24 years of age, just been given a house. She's going to have to raise a mortgage to do something on it. And if she can't raise a mortgage by herself, the daughter can't, she might have to bring someone else in on the house.
Yeah.
I don't know if she's a sibling or somebody else that might be able to go in the house and they might own the house. And there's a problem there with gifting the sibling.
Yeah.
Some of it as well. So, but they need to sit down with someone and get some advice on that. Okay, we go for the next one.
Hi, Owen and team. My name is Joe. I'm 55. I will be 56 in November. In November of this year, I'm going to be made redundant after 25 years service with my company. I hope to get about sort of 2.5 years salary. At the minute, I have 98k left on a 250k mortgage. It equates to about sort of 9 more years of payments. So my main question is, would you advise using a chunk of the redundancy to pay off the mortgage and get that off the table? I'd rather not go back into full-time employment. Might do a couple of days part-time. Any help or advice on that would be appreciated. Thank you.
So what part of the question do you think we need to concentrate on here, Sarah?
Should he be paying off his mortgage?
Okay, the general rule of thumb is when you take whatever your mortgage interest rate is, so say you're paying 4% on your in interest on your mortgage, double that number to 8%, okay? And look around and say, if I invested this money, am I going to get 8% or more? Okay. So if you're going to get 8% on it, it means you'll pay tax on it. It's 40% tax, but just let's call it 50% tax. That means you get 8 before tax, you end up with more than 4 after tax, right? And therefore, it makes sense to invest your money instead of doing something else. It also makes sense that, and you might say, oh, 8%, that's a bit much. When interest rates are at 2%, you're doubling it to 4 and you're going, it's fairly straightforward. You'll get better than that. If interest rates on mortgages went up to 8 and you're doubling that to 16, you're going, oh, there's no chance you're going to get that consistently. So it's about what are you going to do with the money if you don't clear it off the mortgage?
Yeah.
There's another element to this, though, here. This guy is 56 years of age. He doesn't want to go back to work full time. So does he need the money? Like, is 98 grand in his bank account better for him than having no mortgage?
Yeah.
Okay. So what's the right thing for him to do? I really think with a big thing like that coming at him at that stage of his life, if he got a proper financial plan done, they'd be able to establish. There's a nice thing for people in that circumstance. We can establish what, like if we were sitting down with a client, we'd establish what's your date of financial independence.
Okay.
So financial independence is the day in your life where you've created enough wealth that you don't have to work again. You don't have to worry about money.
Yeah.
Okay. And if he's already there at 56, when he gets his 2.5 times his salary in the door from his redundancy, if he's already there, he can actually do whatever he wants from now on. He doesn't have to work, right?
Yeah.
But if he's not already there, one of the things we'll look at and say, okay, when would you like to stop working altogether? Let's say random 65 years of age. So you go, okay, you have 9 years left to work. You need to earn a minimum of X,
right? To be comfortable.
To be comfortable and to make sure that you reach financial independence by 65. Yeah. So let's say, keeping the math simple, he's on 100 grand a year at the moment, making the number up, obviously, 100 grand a year at the moment. And he's not reached financial independence yet. We might say to him, you need to earn 30 grand a year.
Yeah.
Or you need to earn 80 grand a year. Or actually, buddy, you were never on track at 100 grand a year to retire at 65. You weren't going to be able to retire till 70. Yeah. So you need to go find a job of 150 grand a year or else you're working till 70. Okay. And what it does is it gives real clarity and real help for people who have, particularly in a situation like that where they've sold their business, they've been made redundant or they've lost their job. And they're trying to decide, what do I want to do next? Try and find and understand what the financial parameters are.
Yeah.
And that gives you much more scope to actually say, what do I want to do?
Mm.
And maybe I'll just go out on my own, do a bit of consulting or do whatever and set up on my own. Or I'll do my part-time work and that's all I need to do and be happy away to tip away.
Yeah.
Does that make sense?
Yeah, definitely. So he just needs to kind of decide where he wants to be and if he wants to pay off the mortgage now, if he's financially independent, or, you know, he needs to decide what the next 10-15 years look like.
I think the key message for this individual is it's always worth getting financial advice or sitting down with a financial planner. And people will say, oh, you would say that.
Yeah.
But particularly at the moment, he's about to get a lump of cash. He's trying to make a decision on the mortgage. He's not sure what he wants to do next, but the financial plan will tell him what he needs to do next, if anything at all.
Yeah.
And he doesn't have a whole pile of runway left on career if he does want to keep going with the career. So the decisions he's making right now are absolutely pivotal.
Yeah.
So I think a good, clear financial plan from somebody who is good at doing it and is going to talk to him in his language is invaluable at the moment. Yeah.
That makes sense.
Okay. Is it just two this week? It is?
It is just
okay.
two.
Okay. So tell us, how do we get in touch?
So please do get in touch with questions, suggestions, topics that you'd like us to cover. And any questions that you are sending, send them by voice note. And that is to 087-291-0507 and on WhatsApp is perfect.
Thanks, Sarah. When you sit back and you think back over this episode and you're wondering about how do influencers actually make their money? What I'm really learning from it is, I think, A, if I was an influencer and I had to make my money from that, I definitely want an agent or a management company on my side, because it seems to be very much they'll do one deal with one person and a different deal with another. And the advantage that the management company has is they get to see all the deals, and particularly the bigger management companies. They'll take their cut and let them take their cut, but I would say that's something that they really need to do. I also think we need to sit back as a society, as individuals, and start to really question what content has been put in front of us. And I think Aileen made a really good point about people need to stay true to what their beliefs are and what they value and what their, I think she said, pillars or foundations of what it is that they're trying to achieve. They need to stay true to themselves. And I certainly am taking away from this from now on that if someone just keeps firing product in my face and there's no connection between what it is, I'm going to unfollow them, because otherwise I'm forming part of the problem. And I'm not even sure there's a big problem there. If they can get paid for what they're doing, let them get paid. But when I'm on Instagram or I'm on social media and I'm being influenced, I want to at least believe that the person who's influencing me believes in what they're telling me. And I think there's good ones out there, and I think there's ones out there who won't have longevity, I think is the nicest way I can put it. Really interesting conversation for me. I hope it was interesting for you. Thanks a million for your questions as well. As usual, they're great. Don't forget to get them back in. Get them in to Sarah and the team. Send in a voice note, your question, be honest, and we do want to hear from you. If you want to join us in the show, if you want to tell us your story, please get in touch. The number, I have to look down here, is 087-291-0507. Any suggestion for guests? And the last request, you're coming to the end of today's podcast. Just when you stop, jump in there, whatever platform you're listening or watching this, and hit the follow button. Talk to you soon.